Good evening. It is great to be here. I count it an honor to be with you and to be a co-worker with you. It is amazing the influence you have. And I'm convinced that none of us really realize what difference we're making. Folks hear and listen and apply, and a lot of times we don't even know that. If you're familiar with the way I operate, I like to start out with rules. I am intrigued with rules. New Shepherd's Orientation, we spend about an hour going over the rules of how we're going to talk before we get started talking. People say, well, I don't like all those rules. Everybody's got them. Everybody's got them. Rules are simply habits, the way we usually do stuff. Most of our family rules are unconscious, unspoken, understood, and contradictory, which means we don't think much about it, we don't talk much about it. If you violate one, you are in serious trouble, and our rules are contradictory, and that's what causes us stress. I have one rule that tells me to do this, and then another rule says this, and they don't agree. The illustration I use, when I was a younger fella, I thought the 65-mile speed limit on our state highways means just go about as fast as you can. 30 miles meant slow down just a little bit. I always thought it's stupid to stop at a stoplight if nobody's coming, because if nobody's coming, all you're doing is waiting for somebody to get close enough to hit you. So I just ran stop sign. But for some reason, one day I got to reading Romans 13, and it says, obey every ordinance of man, not because of fear, but for conscience sake. So I started a rule about the time they started cruise control. I set my cruise 1 mile an hour below the speed limit. So if you see me going down the highway and it's on the interstate, I'll have my cruise set at 69. That's just the way I do it. And when I see a policeman, I don't get scared and slam on the brakes. I'm already doing a mile on the speed limit. I just keep cruising, Now, I have another set of rules that I'm cheap. And so where I get into a bind is going downhill and start getting past the speed limit, because if I put on my brakes, I'm doing two things. Number one, I'm wearing my brake pads out and I'm messing up my gas mileage. And so that's where stress comes, and I'm not going to tell you who wins on that. But that's just an illustration. Family rules are unconscious, unspoken, understood, and contradictory. And so I think there's a better way, and that is, why don't we think about it? Why don't we talk about it? Why don't we agree on how we're going to operate in a group? Our elders right now at Central and MacMinnville, they're spending time, they're getting a whole document together as to how they will act as a group of elders, how they react to preachers and youth ministers, how they'll react to each other, how they make decisions, rules of confidentiality, the whole business of how they're going to treat each other. I got that idea from Northside of Nashville and from Hilldale in Clarksville. Hilldale and Clarksville, they have their elder rules framed, and they're on display at each entrance and right outside the elder's office. So not only do the elders have an agreement of how they're going to operate, but every member of the church can say, and so if an elder starts talking bad about another elder, preacher, youth minister, you say, wait a minute, I thought y'all had a rule that you didn't talk disparagingly about somebody else. And so it's just a way. So here's three rules. I got a lot more if we were going to go into more, and we'll do some during the discussion. But anytime I do a workshop, hold a gospel meeting, or anything else, rule number one, try not to learn very much. And that will be easy with me leading the discussion. Anybody here still enrolled in school? Some of you probably have some classes. Hold up your hands. Anybody enrolled in any classes? Okay. Don't take that advice for the classes where you have to take tests. That'll mess you up. But since I've graduated and don't take tests anymore, I try not to learn very much. I love to study, read lots of books, listen to a lot of podcasts. I try not to learn very much. And I'm usually successful in that. Like to read books, don't learn very much. But what I enjoy is trying to learn something. I call it the mustard seed principle. Jesus said, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you can move a mountain. I really, in fact, the book that has been the most significant in my life besides the Bible is a book called Generation to Generation by Edwin Freeman. It's on family systems. He was a Jewish rabbi, marriage and family therapist, worked in the Lyndon Johnson administration. And since I got into family systems, which are really rules or understanding how groups work, it's just been amazing. He started an organization called Center for Family Process in Bethesda, Maryland. They bring preachers in. You stay a week in the fall, a week in the winter, and a week in the spring. It's powerful. Lectures during the morning, practical application, case studies during the afternoon. The second week I went, I took notes on 2 3x5 cards for the whole week, threw one of them away before I got on the airplane, so I wouldn't weigh as much. But what I got on that 1 3x5 card was worth the trip and all the preparation I made. What is important is not how much I can recite and record after I get through, but what am I going to do about it? At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus did not say, okay, I'm passing out a test, and if you didn't make 85, you're going to have to sit here and I'm going to preach this thing again. He said, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them is like a wise man. And so try to find something you can do. Number two. What time did you get up this morning? Been going at it pretty hard all day long. So I don't know how much you slept last night, what kind of medicine you're taking. So sometimes you ever notice yourself or other people going kind of like that? If I see anybody doing that, I want to tell you what I'm going to do about it. I'm going to do absolutely nothing. It doesn't bother me. You know, you can read a lot from the Bible, learn a lot. Acts chapter, when I was a younger preacher, I started preaching when I was 16 years old in Hickman County, Tennessee. And as a young preacher, a lot of times I'd see people nodding, going to sleep, and I'd get offended, get angry. I thought it was an insult to my preaching. But you read Acts 20, and there was a man preaching one night, and the young man went to sleep and fell out of the window and died. Who's preaching that night? Paul, good preacher, bad preacher? Probably a pretty good preacher. So the fact that somebody goes to sleep is not an insult on your preaching. Secondly, we gain a lot of wisdom by reflecting on our own experiences. As I told you, I started preaching June 18, 1961. If you'd like to send me an anniversary, that'll be 60 years on June 18, 1961. And I was senior in high school. It was 1962, November. I was down at Wolf Creek Church of Christ in Hickman County, Tennessee. I was about halfway through the sermon, and I said in Hebrews 10, verse 24 and 25, pow, hit the floor, went to sleep right in the middle of my own sermon. And actually, I mean, they took me into Centerville. Dr. Parker Elrod was the doctor. He examined me. His son, Burton, is the team physician for the Titans. Went the next day to Dr. In Nashville, who had been treating me for a thyroid issue, Dr. Morris Katiski. He gave me a thorough examination. Both of them said, all we can figure is that you were exhausted. I played guard on a basketball team. We had a full court press going both ways on Friday night. Daddy was building a rock house, hauled rocks all day on Saturday, went bowling in Columbia on Saturday night, got up early Sunday morning to study, and along about halfway through the sermon, it was time for a nap, and I took one. So I thought about that. If I sleep when I preach, why should I be offended if other people sleep? So, go sleep. I'm not going to throw any books down, shout, do anything else. I always like to take a waste basket with me anytime I go. If I say anything that's not worth taking home, feel free to use a wastebasket. Now, I like to put a filter on that. If God said it, I'd suggest you not throwing it in a wastebasket. And we'll mention a verse or two of Scripture, try to drift into one a time or two. But much of what I'll be talking about tonight is, this is my opinion, here's what I think about it, here's what I think, this is my observation. I think it's pretty good, or I wouldn't say it. You may say, you know, that's not worth taking home. Feel free to use the wastebasket. Or if you're on Windows, you can put it in the trash bin and empty it about every 2 weeks or however long you think you need to. Okay, what we're talking about is relationships among leaders. Just some quick responses. Describe for me briefly what kind of relationships you like to have with fellow leaders. Just tell me, describe that. What was it? What does a good leadership relationship look like? Preachers, elders, deacons, what was that? Tell me about it.
Trusting.
Trusting. What else?
Partners.
Partners.
Mutually beneficial.
Mutually beneficial. Good, good.
Professional.
Professional.
Honest.
Honest.
Open communication.
Okay.
Mutual submission.
Okay. Man, great stuff. That's good relationships. Anybody ever have a train wreck? So what is a bad relationship? What does that look like? Just describe it briefly.
Dishonest.
It's kind of tough to deal with that, isn't it? What else?
Lack of communication.
Angry, yeah.
Stubborn.
Okay.
Arrogance.
All right. Man. Okay. Three verses. Romans 12:18. Here's the way we start on good relationships. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. What does that say? May not be possible. You know, there's some folks you can't get along with. I don't care what you do, you can't do it. But if it's possible, and then as much as it depends on you, me, means personal application, then do everything you can to live peaceably with all men. So there's a good rule on leadership relationships. Again, I'm into rules. One of the best rules I have found is this one. Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do to them also. Isn't that a wonderful rule? Matthew 7, verse 12. It is amazing over the years how many calls I have gotten from elders wanting to talk to me on how to fire their preacher. Now, don't blame me if you got fired. I mean, I always... One of the most interesting, several years ago, got a call, didn't remember ever meeting any of the elders before, but they said, we're getting ready to fire a preacher and we want to do a good job, can we come talk? I said, sure. They drove 4 hours to talk to me, we talked. And they just described for me, I said, well, tell me, give me a little background. Well, church started in 1969. I said, okay, who was your first preacher? And they told me, and they said, we kept him about 2 years, and we had to let him go. I said, oh, man, that's terrible. I said, well, who's next? And so I'm writing these notes down. They said, well, we've got Brother so-and-so, and said, he stayed about 3 years, and we fired him. And this next fella came, stayed about 2 years, and we had to let him go, and we just went on. And we got down to the prayer. I said, brethren, do you realize what I've just written down here? You have had 11 preachers and you fired 10 of them. And you have driven 4 hours to talk to me on how you can make it 11 out of 12. Did it ever occur to you that the preachers may not be the problem? I said, either you're hiring bad preachers, which is a reflection on you, or you're hiring good preachers and messing them up after they get there. What really hurts my feelings, and I've had it happen to, well, myself, that's one of them, but I've had it happen to a lot of friends. Just call a preacher in and fire him without any warning whatsoever. The most painful day in my life, even including the death of my mother and daddy, was December 19, 1976 at 10:50 in the morning. Not that I keep records or anything. I had just taught a Bible class. I walked up into the hall getting ready to go into the auditorium to preach. And one of the elders said, "Brother Jerry, would you step in the office just a minute?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Brother Jerry, I think you need to think about resigning this morning." I looked at my notes, and I'd been studying all week, and there wasn't anything in those notes about that. Never entered my mind. Walked in the auditorium. You know the first song we sang? "Anywhere is Home." Songs are different for different people. What I think about every time we sing, "Anywhere is home, let come or go what may." Man, that's what I think about every time. "Anywhere is home." But I think it is horrible to do that. Been doing interim ministry 14 years. We're with our 9th church. A lot of times when a preacher stays a long time, does a good job, they don't like whoever comes next. That's just the way it is. I volunteer to be the one they don't like. During the 6 to 18 months that Gail and I spend with them, they have time to grieve their loss and hopefully gain some wisdom on how to select another preacher. I went to one. Preacher had been there over 20 years. Is at the hospital on a Thursday night. The elders were meeting. They said, "We'd like you to drop by. We need to talk to you a minute." And he walked in and they said, "Okay, we just want to tell you, last Sunday was your last Sunday with us. Here's a check for 90 days according to our contract. We don't want you teaching any more Bible classes, no more sermons." That's it. For some reason, he wasn't real happy about that, and none of his friends. You know, if you stay 20 years, you're going to make a few friends, and they get aggravated when folks hurt you. And they were confused about why the congregation was upset. I usually am fairly slow to start making suggestions. Now, on new members, new shepherds orientation, I only got one weekend, so I have to get started pretty fast on that. But when I go in for an interim, a lot of times it'll be 6 months or a year before I say anything, and then I try to be as easy as I can. But at that church, I went around and I asked the elders, "You've been with the power company 27 years. You plan to retire in 3 years. How would you feel Monday morning if two people walk in with boxes in their hands and say, 'Friday was your last day. There's your severance pay. See you later.' Would you really enjoy that? You've never been reprimanded. You've never been written up." And I went around the table and one of those elders said, "Yeah, that's what I always dreamed of. I just hope that's the way I get to leave." I said, "There's a rule about that, and it says, 'As you would that men should do to you, do you even so to them.'" So that is a wonderful rule. Now, let's look at another one. Here's one that's powerful. I don't know why it took me 50-something years to really let it sink in. Proverbs 21, verse 2. "Every way of a man is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the heart." You know why people do what they do? Anybody have an idea? They want to, and the reason they want to, they really have thought it out, and they think that's the best thing for them to do today. "Yeah, that's really what I need to do today. I don't care whether it's shooting people up or if it's elders or deacons or youth ministers or preachers. Even the dumb things, that's the reason folks do it." Yeah, that's what I thought every way of a man is right in his own eyes. Well, surely somebody ought to know better the bad things. You know why people killed Jesus? They really thought that's the best thing for them to do that particular day. How do I know? The Bible tells me so. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them." Why? They don't know what they're doing. Every way of a man is right in his own eyes. Peter said in Acts chapter 3, Brethren, I know that through ignorance you did it, as did also your rulers. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, Paul said, for had they known, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. Now, how can that help me to have better relationships? If I will really believe that and think about that, I won't get as angry and irritated with my elders and fellow workers, because if I realize they're doing the best they know how right now. Have you ever done something that you thought was the best thing you could do and say, boy, that was dumb. That was not very kind. I wouldn't want anybody treating me that way. Anybody ever done that? That's what everybody else is doing also. And so one of the best things I can do is to model and sometimes gently teach a better way to do stuff. Okay. Here's the way we start good relationships. Evaluate the relationship before you get into it. Somebody asked me today, which was more fun, your full-time preaching or your interim preaching? Let me say I enjoyed my full-time preaching. It was just delightful. Preached for 5 congregations. And every one of them, I learned and got good friends and all of that. I don't know. Well, y'all probably not going to compete with me because I'll be 76 next Monday, so you probably won't be ready for interim ministry. But interim ministry to me has been like a 12-month-a-year vacation. It is absolutely delightful. I get to do exactly what I want to do. I'm off a week each month. That's in the contract, 2 days each week. How'd you do that? We'll talk more about that. You get it in the contract. Whatever you want, you get it in the contract. We live in a different place. What Gail and I like to do on vacation is just rent a car. We'll fly to somewhere we've never been before. We'll rent a car and just wander around out in the country. Well, we do the same thing in the interim ministry. We go to Sykeston, Missouri, and we say, let's go north this afternoon. So, yeah, we go up explore that, and then we'll go west, and then we'll go eat. It's just delightful. And so you evaluate. And one of the things I tell a church when I go as an interim, we're not ready to look for a preacher. We're going to spend 7 weeks on Luke 9:23. If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. We're ready to look at ourselves. Are we the kind of church that would attract the kind of preacher that we need at this time? And more specifically, am I the kind of Christian that a really good preacher would just really enjoy working with? And if everybody will be that kind of person, then we'll attract the kind of preacher we need. So let's look at ourselves. And I remind them, when you get ready to start, quote, trying out preachers, not only are you trying out preachers, but if a preacher's worth his salt, he's trying you out. There's an equalization of pressure, and if you hadn't done that yet, be sure you do it. Now, first time or two, I was so scared I'd take any job I could get. That's one of the things that happens in interim ministry. People get in a hurry. They say, we need to get on with the Lord's work. We need to speed this thing up. I said, well, if the elders will let me, I can have you a preacher here next Sunday morning. I know enough desperate preachers, they'll move in 2 days' notice. Now, I have no guarantee as to their fit for this congregation. But a good preacher, well, I remember, I was moving in 1988. I got a call from a fellow. We had been in Freed Hardeman together. He was serving as an elder, and he said, Jerry, here you're thinking about moving. I said, yeah, I've resigned, and I'm looking for a place to preach. He said, would you consider coming to Mobile, Alabama? I said, yeah, Gail and I have talked about it. We're kind of going to keep it in the lower 48. We're not applying in Hawaii or Alaska, but other than that, we're pretty well open. He said, well, good. He said, send me your resume, 3 references and 3 tapes of your sermon. I said, yes, sir, get it in the mail in the morning. I said, now what I need from you, I need 3 tapes of your present preacher, Sunday morning and Sunday night, 6 lessons and all. I need three references. I need your attendance and contribution for the last 5 years. As it says in the book of Revelation, there was silence for about a half an hour. He said, what do you want those for? I said, what do you want mine for? He said, well, I don't know you. I said, I don't know you. Why don't we get acquainted? And so if you have not practiced that, that's the way you start out with good relationship, is find out what kind of relationship you're getting into. And literally do every bit of that. When I was in full-time preaching, it was just a policy. Interview preachers for the last 25 years. Interview the secretary, janitor. Interview people who are still going it. Interview people who left that congregation happy. Interview people who left the congregation unhappy. I interviewed a Baptist deacon one time. He had gone to the church where I was thinking about going. Tried to find out how did he get there. Just need to find out all we can. There's some eligible men who don't need to marry eligible women. They're not either one of them bad, both good Christians. They just don't fit. There's a lot of good preachers who don't need to go to a lot of good congregations. Both of them's good. They're scriptural. They just don't fit. And the best time to find that out is before you get there. And so we need to do a lot of checking, interviewing, check references. In selecting preachers, two things that happen. Get in too big a hurry, don't check references. By the time you get to reference checking, most people have already fallen in love, and all they want the references to say, yeah, he's a good man, get him when you can. What I do when I check references, I say, I need to talk with you about 45 minutes to an hour. When can we have an appointment to talk? And I got 5 pages of questions that I go through. If a person cannot tell me the person's weaknesses, I throw the whole thing in the trash can. Either they don't know the person well enough or they're not being honest. I don't think a preacher's ready to move or a congregation ready to hire a preacher who not only knows what they like about that person, but also what they don't like and how they're going to put up with it. I learned a lot. One of my best educational experiences has been premarital counseling for the last 40-something years. I just love it. Now, when I meet with a couple for premarital counseling, I'll let them know I'm not doing this for your benefit. I'm doing it for my benefit. Y'all are in love, and you're not going to hear a thing I say. That's okay. The reason I'm doing it is I don't like to perform ceremonies for folks I don't know, so I want to get acquainted so I'll know who I'm preaching for. One of the exercises I absolutely love, I have an assignment. Tell me 12 to 15 reasons why you want to marry this person. What are you bringing to this marriage that will make it work? What are you getting out of marriage that you would not have gotten had you remained single? And so they got about a week or two to think about this. And they come back, and I mean, it is wonderful. They just pouring it on. 12 to 15 reasons. They just talk about how great this person is. And I'm sure they're right. And I said, okay, here's your pop quiz. What is one thing you don't like about the other person? You think you'll be able to change it in 6 months, but you won't. And how are you going to put up with it? Need to learn that about the congregation if you're thinking about going as youth minister, song leader, whatever you're going. What is it you don't like and how are you going to put up with it? Same thing about the preacher. See, there's some things you can put up with and some things you can't put up with. If you can't put up with it, you know the best time, as David Sane used to preach, the best time to get a divorce before you get married. That's the best time. Just don't do it. Don't do it. So, it begins with checking reference. I'll tell you one of the best ones. What I recommend generally is when the congregation gets ready to hire a youth minister, preacher, they get a search committee, broad base of the church. And the best thing I've seen is Don Vyer's book. Don Vyer is a member of the church at Jefferson Avenue in Cookeville, Tennessee. And he said that Tennessee Tech was looking for a department head, and they asked if he would serve on the search committee. And he said yes, and he said he went, and they said, okay, here's the procedure. And he said they had a procedure all, and he said, we just went through the steps, narrowed it down, got a, he said, we did a good job. He said at the same time at Jefferson Avenue, we were looking for a youth minister, and they asked me to serve on the selection committee. I went to the first meeting, and they said, well, how are we going to do this? I don't know how y'all been doing it. Well, I don't know, but I hope we'll hurry up because I'm already busy right now. And he said, man, man, there's got to be a better way. And so he wrote the book on, what is it, Search Committee Handbook. Get it from Amazon. But search committee, what I like to see the search committee is get it down to four. And we're not bringing these men in. We're not having a beauty contest. We're just looking at references, listening to sermons, checking references, finding out all we can. And then they hand it over to the elders. The elders bring these four best people in Friday night and Saturday. No tryouts, sermons or anything like that. And then they select that person. Well, they were doing that at College Side in Cookeville. And they told me on a Monday or Tuesday one week, the elders had one of those men in that weekend. And you know what he did? He didn't leave town after the interview. He stayed and came to worship the next morning. And they told me about it. And I got up the next Sunday morning and I said, do you know what happened here last Sunday morning? You were trying out and you didn't even know it. I said, one of the top four men that our search committee has been observing stayed over and stayed here last Sunday morning, and you were trying out. He was watching and listening to how you were singing, how friendly you were, how clean the bathrooms were. He was looking at everything in the world to see if this is the kind of place where he would want to work. I didn't know it. 600 people come on Sunday morning. I mean, there's new people there every week. I didn't recognize him. And I said, you know what? There may be one of those fellows around this morning. You better be nice. And if there's not a preacher here, God's here, so we better be nice anyhow. So we need to do a good job trying out. Second thing is the contract. Contract. I am a contract connoisseur. I learned, what time did I start? Anybody have an idea? All right, we'll go. We could be through before midnight. And then we got one more session after that. Let me tell you where I learned this lesson. University of Hard Knocks, colors black and blue, and the school yell is ouch. My first preaching place out of school was a congregation that had never had a full-time preacher before. I'd never preached full-time. No agreements. We've been there about a year. I asked them if I could have a week off during the Christmas season to visit family. They said, sure, it'll be fine. So, the Sunday before I left, one of the elders got up and he was tickling. He said, Brother Jerry, we've taken up some money and we'd like for you to have this as a Christmas present. Got $30. And my wife said, Jerry, what are you going to do with your $30? I said, Gail, if it would be okay with you, I'd really like to buy a pair of Sunday shoes. I said, every time it rains, my feet get soaked. There's holes in the bottom, they're not worth fixing. She said, I'd really like for you to have some shoes. How are we going to make a car payment? I said, man, the car payment's in the budget. We got it. She said, they won't pay us Sunday. We're gone. I said, yeah, they will. She said, no, they won't. I said, well, you know, every preacher gets a week or two paid vacation. She said, you wait and see. Guess who was right? Gail was right, as she is most of the time. I waited a week or two just to be sure that, you know, they wouldn't go. And so I asked them, I said, what's your policy about preachers and having a week or two paid vacation? They said, we never had a preacher and we don't have a policy. And one of them said, well, it didn't do nothing. Let's don't give him nothing. And they all vote, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. What did I learn from that? You really ought to talk about stuff like that before you get started. So guess what? Went to the next place, did it. 2 weeks vacation, 4 weeks gospel meeting, 90-day notice either way, and we'll pay you up to 90 days if you hadn't got a job. All that was 8 years later. I was leaving, and somebody said, are we paying Jerry for running around all over the country trying to get a job? And they said, yeah, we pay him every week. Well, what about that, Jerry? I said, well, I came here, and I named the elders. We agreed, you know, up to 90 days. Two of them had died, one had resigned, but he was still there. And they said, Brother Holly, what about that? He said, well, seemed like we talked about that, but I don't remember exactly what we said. What did I learn from that? Not only should you have agreements, but they need to be written. Written. Well, back in my daddy's day, they just shook hands on it. I said, man, if that works for your daddy, I'm proud for him. Here's what I want. I want it written. I want it signed. I'm going to put it in Dropbox. I'm going to back it up in iCloud Drive. I've got three hard disks that I rotate on the first day of every month. Time machine, first day of every month, I'll pull this one out. I got one in the batting box right here. I'll take this one over to the apartment, bring the apartment, put it in the batting box. And so those rotate all the way around. And then put the original in your safety deposit box. Barber, not Bible. The only person who does not need a written agreement are people who are never going to die and never going to forget anything. And you need to be working with people who will never die and never forget anything. Otherwise, you better write it down. Well, I don't think that's very spiritual. That wasn't just verbal. If you'll check it out, God made duplicate copies of the Ten Commandments before Xerox was ever thought of. He put it in stone, so it is spiritual to write things down. So get a good contract. Let me tell you how specific. What do you need in a contract? Anything that you might forget? That's it. Anything that's important. If it's not important, just leave it out. That'll take a lot less time to type it up. Here's three that I have added. It took me 50 years to get one of these in, but here, boy, this is powerful. 50 years after I started preaching, I started adding this to every contract. Any criticism of Jerry Barber will be directed to Jerry Barber, and it will be welcomed. Jerry Barber does not accept anonymous criticism. I'd have people come up, a lot of people are upset. Well, who is it? Well, that's confidential, but a lot of people are upset. Now, another observation on contracts. A lot of people think they're magic and it'll... No, no, no. You know what people will do? They'll forget what they promised they were going to do. And so the key to contracts is, number one, make good contracts, and number two, be willing to hold each other accountable. And so I still have elders from time to time get up, oh, you know, we heard some criticism. Okay, we can't tell you. Okay, I can't. Tell them to come talk to me about it. See, I can't accept anonymous criticism. I'd be violating my contract. And it's not right anyhow. Matthew 18:15, if somebody misses a mark, tell them to go talk to the person who's missing the mark. So that's powerful. Here's one for interim ministry. It is understood that under no circumstances will Jared W. Barber be considered as the next full-time preacher for this congregation. So far, I'm batting 1,000. Every one of them has asked me to stay. We'd just like for you to be here. Well, one of my favorite stories, I've been at Hendersonville for 3 months. An older lady came up and she called an elder. She said, I want you to hear this. She said, Brother Barber, I was not going to like you before you came. I just made up my mind. I wasn't going to like you. Keith Parker's my favorite preacher, and I wasn't going to like you, but now you and Gail have been here 3 months. I like you. And for the last 2 weeks, I have been praying that you would be our next full-time preacher. Is it a sin for me to pray that? I said, absolutely not. 1 John 5 says, this is the confidence we have in Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He hears us. You can ask anything in the world you want to if you want to do God's will more. And so, no, there's no sin in praying that. Now, if God granted your request, you'd have a line preacher on your hand. I don't know what in the world you'd do with that. So it's important to get... Here's one, just practical experience. Central agrees to give Jerry a W-2 with the total compensation minus the estimated housing allowance in line 1 and the estimated housing allowance in line 14. Why'd you do that? I've had a lot of opposition to preachers taking their housing allowance. I had one man and his wife who advised the men, they didn't have elders, said, don't do that. I don't think it's fair and don't like it. And then after they finally said, well, we're going to do it anyhow because it's, you know, it's allowable and all of that. And then they gave me a messed up W-2 form. So if you run into that 2 or 3 times, just write it into the contract. Get a good contract. Now, once I go to a church, one of the first things I like to do is to get with the elders, and one at a time, I want to pick you up one day this week. I'd like to pick you up at your place of business, like to kind of see what you do, and then I'd like for us to go eat lunch together. And so that's hopefully the first week after I get there, individually, one at a time. What I'm doing, I'm reaching out to them to try to establish a good relationship with them. First Thessalonians 5 says we need to esteem those who are over you and get to know those who are over you and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, be at peace among yourselves. Observation. Most churches do not show proper appreciation for their elders. Well, I don't agree with what they say. Didn't say if you agree with everything. It says for their work's sake. I don't remember working for an eldership that didn't do anything. Now, they may not have done what I wanted them to do or, you know, a lot of things. But most elders spend a lot of time. Sometimes they spend a lot of time doing the wrong things, but you know why they do it? They think they're doing the right thing. So every way of a man's right in his own eyes, including elders, youth ministers, preachers, and other human beings. And so he said you need to show appreciation for that. When I go into a church to do conflict management or go into a church that's split or whatever, you know one of the most frequently asked questions? How do you get rid of a bad elder? I've got an answer for that. Would anybody like to know that? How do you get rid of a bad elder? Here's the secret. Have a lot of elder appreciation parties. That'll do it. Say thank you, thank you, thank you. I think at least once a year you ought to have an elder appreciation party. Well, how's that going to help? If all you and I do is gripe and complain and criticize, and then they really do something bad and you criticize them again, what are they going to say? That's all he ever does, gripe. That's all I ever hear. But if you said thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and really mean it, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, and then say, brother, we need to talk. That's a little different there. See, the best way to get rid of bad elders, don't get any bad elders. We're going through the elder selection process right now. The fellow that fired me was a new elder, only been an elder 6 months. When I went to we only had 2 elders. When I went to the other elder right after service, I said, Robert, what in the world happened? I mean, when did y'all decide to fire me? He said, what in the world are you talking about? I said, well, this elder fired me right before worship this morning. He said, I never heard anything about that. Isn't that interesting? You know why he did that? He really thought that's the best thing for him to do. A lady came to me and she said, Jerry, I knew we shouldn't have appointed that man an elder. She said, his wife runs the house. She knows it, he knows it, we know it, everybody knows it, and she did a pretty good job running the house. I mean, they had good kids. And so what happened, I learned 2 or 3 years later, some folks were unhappy about some things. We had withdrawn fellowship from some people, and some folks were upset, and he stopped by one night to ask a member of the church, what do you think it'll take to settle things down? And this man said, I think if Jerry were to find another place to preach, and he moved, I think everything would settle down. So what did he do? He thought it was his responsibility to tell me, and he just told me the next morning. He thought that was his duty. So this lady said, I knew he wasn't qualified. I said, I did too. When we were selecting him, what did you say about that? And she said, nothing. I said, I didn't either. Look at the mess we're in. If a situation is chronic in any group, it's because everybody likes it the way it is more than what it would take to change it. And so the key is to ask, what do I need to do about that? So, we need to have a lot of elder. One of the first things I do when I go for New Shepherd's orientation or work with the church, how long has it been since you had an elder's appreciation party? Went to one church and they said, we never have had one. We don't appreciate our elder. Now, that's funny. Let me tell you this. You know what I believe? I believe that a group is the lengthened shadow of their leaders. Same congregation. I've been there about 3 years. We're having an elders meeting on Wednesday night. One of the elders walks in with papers for everybody, and it is his paper of resignation. He said, my wife and I have been talking about this for quite some time, and we believe it's time for me to resign. I've been serving 30 years because of health and other issues. Elders ask him not to, of course, being polite, and probably meaning as well, but he said, no, we thought about it, enjoyed it, appreciated it, and he left. I said, okay, what kind of party are we going to have? I'm a party man. And they said, what are you talking about? I said, what kind of party are we going to have to show appreciation for 30 years of service? They said, we're not going to have no party. I said, well, what kind of plaque? Who buys the plaques here? They said, what are you talking about? I said, surely you're going to give them a 30-year plaque for 30 years. They said, we're not going to give them a plaque. I said, you start giving out plaques and parties and everybody want to resign. So what we did is my wife cooked a delicious meal, and we invited them out to our house, and we bought them a nice book, wrote them a letter of appreciation, and we had an elders appreciation party. Where did that church get an attitude of ungratitude? Probably came from the leaders. See, the leaders didn't even appreciate each other, and that just oozes out to the whole group. A group is a lengthened shadow of its leaders. One of the things that I look forward to every Wednesday morning at 9:30 are staff meetings. I find a lot of preachers don't like youth ministers, and a lot of youth ministers don't like their preachers, and they'll talk to me about it. First question I ask, what do y'all do in staff meetings? And you know what they say? We don't have any staff meetings. Well, no wonder you don't like each other if you don't spend any time. If you don't aim to spend any time with each other, you won't spend any time with each other, and you won't get to know each other, and you will not have a relationship. You'll get suspicious and fearful, and all kinds of things going to happen. Love staff meetings. You don't know me very well, but guess what we do when I go to a church that doesn't have a staff meeting? What do I do in the first staff meeting? Anybody know? Have a staff meeting, the first thing we do in that staff meeting is set up the rules. What's the rules going to be? And so we got the rules. What time we're going to meet, how long we're going to meet, what we're going to do. What we do in our staff meetings, number one, we have 30 minutes of Bible study. We read a chapter out of the Bible and we comment on it. What do you learn about God? What do you learn about human beings? and what do I need to do as a result of what I've learned? Number two, we have coordination. I call it secretaries running the church. Did you know that secretaries run the church, but they deny it because if they ever get found out, people take their power away. So we coordinate what all we need to be doing during the week. Third thing we do is staff development. Staff development is reading about three pages out of a book. The book that I usually use is on family systems. Leaders That Last by Margaret Marcuson, or Healthy Congregations by Peter Steinke. And it just explains this. And then we have at least once a month what we call dessert. And dessert is Friedman's Fables. Edwin Friedman has a book of fables, some of the weirdest stories you've ever read in your life, with 10 questions at the end of each one of those. And we'll just hee-haw during some of those. I mean, it's some of the most interesting things you ever read. It is amazing what people will tell about themselves as they read the Bible and reflect on what they, well, that reminds me of this, or this seems like this might be helpful in this case. The Word of God is alive and active and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even the dividing asunder of the soul and spirit and joints and marrow, and it is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. It'll get inside our brains and just do all kinds of things, and we'll get in communication and relationship with each other if we do that. And so staff meetings are an excellent time. Leadership meetings. My last full-time work was with Various Chapel Church of Christ in Franklin, Tennessee. When I went there in June of 1993, for the last decade, they had had a fuss every 2 years. They had the fuss of 86, fuss of 88, fuss of 90, fuss of 92. I went in 93, we had the fuss of 95 after I got there. It was just one of their rules, every 2 years you have fuss, have fuss, have fuss. And Father's Day, 1995, two out of three elders resigned, which means we have no eldership. We do an elder search. November 19, 1995, we appoint, ordain four new elders. Not a one had ever served a day in their life. I wrote a blog post on that, starting from scratch. So usually what you do is you bring in new elders and you say, this is the way we've always done it. Okay, we'll do it that way. Well, they couldn't do that. They hadn't always done it because they had never done it before. You're talking about powerful. That is powerful. You know what they did? They told the church, here's two things we're going to do for 1 year. Number one, we're going to read everything that the Bible says about shepherds and about elders, and we're going to try to do that. Number two, we're going to try to learn how to get along with each other. See what we're talking about tonight? We're going to spend some time learning about each other, becoming friends, and learning how to get. They'd seen what happens when you don't get along. We'd had a divided eldership before. And so they did that. And one of the things we did, each month when we'd have our leadership meeting, preachers and elders, youth ministers, elders, we'd go around the table and we'd basically say, how's it been at your house for the last 30 days? And everybody just kind of tell how it'd been at their house. Most of the time been good. If I were reporting, I'd say, you know, it's been real good. Enjoy going down to Restern and Cool Springs. We celebrated my daughter-in-law's 2018 birthday. We're a little behind. We try to take each one of the kids and their spouses out on their birthday, but I got a record. We're going to try to catch up one of these days. So that's always enjoyable, and things are going fine. Somebody to say. But here's the one that stands out in my mind. On this particular night, one of the elders said, in the last 30 days, my wife had her third back surgery. We wish she had never had the first, because she's in worse shape now than she was then. As you know, Daddy died. Mother's not able to live by herself, so we've moved her in with us. Last week, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. I got fired on Friday. Let's pray. And we did. And we knew that every time we got together, we were going to do that before we left and went home. Observation, every bit of that comes out in every interaction we have with each other, every elders meeting. We can either talk it out or act it out, and I found that talking it out and praying it out is better than ignoring it. I have this saying from Acts 20:28, where Paul says, take heed to yourselves, take heed to yourselves, take heed to yourselves and to all the flock. When shepherds shepherd shepherds, shepherds will better shepherd the sheep. But if shepherds don't shepherd shepherds, shepherds probably won't shepherd the sheep. And so we need to be taking care of each other. And if we as leaders cannot talk with each other about those kind of things, what in the world is it? Does anybody think that 200 or 300 people is going to come out and pour our hearts, their hearts out to us when we won't even talk about the same things ourselves? And it's one of the best ways to practice. See, doctors practice. I had a dentist friend. He said, man, let me tell you how powerful it is. You go through and you study anatomy and chemistry and all that kind of stuff, and then you practice on these little plastic dummies. And then you finally get to where you say, okay, I'll do a root canal on you today, and you do one on me tomorrow. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be just as nice to you as I can because I know I'm getting the same thing tomorrow. And see, we need to be doing that with elders and preachers and youth ministers and everybody else. Okay. You need to decide what kind of relationship do you want to have. I like to work with elders where I have some input, meet with them in their meetings, so I get that information. Went to one congregation and I said, I know you never have met with your preacher, and if that's what you want to do, that's fine. I'm just not going to work with you. I don't like to make a suggestion like I'm pleading before the Supreme Court, and then they go and make the decision and come back and there's no appeal. Well, I could have answered that question, well, we've already made a decision, that's it. Don't want to work that way. So I need to find that out before I go. John Maxwell's podcast in Entree Leadership, if you'll send me an email, I'd like to send that to you. He's 73 years old, and he tells the story of a man meeting with him when he was 23 years old and asked him about his life plan. He had never heard of such a thing. But that man coached him, and he made his life plan where he wanted his life to go. And he said, I'm 73 years old, been 50 years since that time, and I have no intention of retiring. Why in the world would I want to do that? He said, it's just like a 401k or an IRA. You get compound interest. I'm getting compound interest on everything I've ever done, and it's more fun than anything I've ever done before in my life, and I want to just keep on doing it. And here this man is, 73 years old, just excited. I'd like to send you that if you'd like to have it. We need to encourage each other. You've heard Kent Blanchard probably saying, if you want to encourage somebody, catch them doing something right and compliment them. You heard that story, One Minute Manager? He said every time he presents that in a workshop, somebody said, well, Mr. Blanchard, that's a good idea, but I work with a bunch of knuckleheads that don't do anything right. What do you do about that? He said, good question. Watch them closely, and catch them doing something approximately right and compliment them for that. See, we can find somebody doing something approximately right. Let me tell you a story about one of the greatest elders I ever worked with, and it's little things many times. I just moved to this town, and an elder and I went out visiting one night. We'd visited 2 or 3 families. It's time to go in. He said, you like ice cream? I said, I sure do. He said, pull in this little Quick Pick Market right here. I still remember he went in and bought a 1/2-gallon box of cherry, almond, vanilla ice cream. That's been 54 years ago. Still remember. He set that right in the middle of his kitchen table. He walked over, he pulled out that drawer and got a big serrated knife. Cut that thing right 1/2 and 2. He handed me 1/2, he took 1/2. He handed me a spoon, he took a spoon. He said, I never did like to eat ice cream unless I could eat all I wanted. That 1/2-gallon, 1/2 of a 1/2-gallon ice cream convinced me This is my kind of man. It's those it's those little things that that make a difference. Let me read this to you, and then we'll have questions and answers and move on. March 2nd, 2009, Dale Jenkins was organizing meetings we had at Granny White Church. And he had one of them. He had three elders to say, to read what elders wish preachers knew about elders. And they had three preachers to have what preachers wish elders knew about preachers. And I called him up and I said, Dale, I hate to try to step in front, you know, get my way, but I'd really rather go last because I think what I'm going to say may mess up everybody else. So here's what I said, what preachers wished elders knew about preachers. I don't wish for elders to know anything about preachers. That can be a problem. Preachers are lazy, irresponsible with money, have bad children. Or preachers are always good, always wise, know all about the Bible, know how to work with people. Now that's a generalization. That's not the way it is. I have enjoyed and benefited from knowing and being known by elders as fellow human beings and struggling Christians with strengths and weaknesses, hopes and fears. I don't want any elders to know anything about preacher. I would really enjoy them knowing something about me and me knowing something about them as a fellow Christian. Some things I want my elders to know about me. I want a friend relationship. I like to visit with each elder. I've said that early in the relationship. I want to begin knowing you as a person. I like to explore the possibility of having multiple relationships, Christian-Christian, friend-friend, elder-preacher, father-father, grandfather-grandfather. I want constant and current evaluation. I want to know where we stand in expectations. What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? How can I improve? I don't want to be surprised by my annual evaluation with 14 things I've done wrong in the last 12 months. I want the annual evaluation to be an encouraging time, a time of affirmation, reminding me of what I've done well. I want to know your current expectations and disappointments. I want to discuss, understand, adjust, and improve quickly. I know that disappointment can lead to irritation that can lead to a damaged relationship will be difficult to repair. Let's stay current. I would like to have a co-shepherding opportunity with you. Everything isn't perfect at my house. I'd like to be able to tell you that. From experience, I guess that everything is not perfect at your house. It is my observation that those successes and failures will come out in conversations and classics and worship and elders meeting. We can either talk it out or act it out. I'd like to have a time we can talk about how we're doing. I would like to have appreciation. I want you to know that I appreciate you as a person for the work you do as an elder. I'm committed to communicating that. Verbal thank yous, elder appreciation events. I want an opportunity to be on the leadership team. I don't want to be a beggar who hears the decision without being involved in the give and take of the decision-making process. I wish I could tell you that I don't know what I'm doing. I wish you knew that I knew that you don't know what you're doing. Working with people is not an exact science. I can't push the right buttons and get the desired results. The process of gaining wisdom can come as we discuss what we don't know and how we can best proceed to do the best we know. We're like Abraham most days. Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he would receive as inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. That's where we are most days. We don't know where we're going. I want you to do what you say you will do. I want you to hold me accountable for doing what I say I will do. Please talk to me when you're considering me as your preacher at your congregation. If you say you'll call, call. If you don't have any new information, call when you said and tell me you don't have any new information. That's one of the most frustrating things I've ever had in my life. Call you Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. Is that Central Time or Eastern Time? Tell the kids, back before cell phones, don't get on the phone. Got a real important clock. And time after time after time after time after time after time, they didn't call, or call a week later. I'd read about it in Gospel Advocate when they had selected somebody else. I can work much better if I rest. I tend to overwork. The longer I stay at the same congregation, the more tasks I take. I get to the point where the load is overwhelming. I feel helpless and hopeless. The only solution I see is to move and start all over. I work much better when I take time off. Please help me with that. The best gift I ever received as a preacher was a sabbatical in the summer of 2000. You can get a new preacher without having a huge raise in salary and without paying moving expenses. The only way I found for elders to know these things about it is to tell them. This has been a scary journey for me. I want to be liked. I want to please. There have been times when fear has caused me not to be liked, not to please. I've tried it both ways. Talking has worked better than not talking. Questions, comments, criticism? What do you have?
Just took a new work about a month ago at a new congregation, and so far everything's been wonderful. We have just really, really enjoyed it. I think I'm going to get along very well with the four shepherds that are there, with the minister that I'm working with. Just to make things better, working somewhere new, what would you suggest that I do first? Three things. Hit me.
This sermon I'm going to preach Sunday night. Are you building your life on facts or fairy tales? John chapter 6. I start off by reading Cinderella. I love fairy tales. I messed up with a lot of things with my kids. One of the things I did right, our kids didn't have a bedtime because I worked late. And our ritual was I laid down in the bed and read a book to them before they went to sleep, whatever time I got in. And we read a lot of fairy tales. Fairy tales, I've noticed they start out with everything is perfect. And then something bad happens. And then something wonderful happens. And then it says, and they lived happily ever after. That's fun, but that's a fairy tale. That's not the way life works. Three steps in a relationship. Number one is honeymoon. You have people, are you still on? You're on your honeymoon.
Yeah.
Are you still on your honeymoon? That's normal. That's normal. But then there will come a disappointment. And then if it becomes a mature relationship, we will work through to reality. John chapter 6, Jesus feeds 5,000 men beside the women and children, 5 loaves and 2 fish, and they said, whoopee, whoopee, whoopee. This is what we've been looking for. This is the prophet that was to come into the world, and they tried to force him to become a king. Next day, he said, we need chat. Incidentally, don't have any more picnics planned anywhere in the near future. You need to not work for meat which perishes, food which perishes, but that which extends to everlasting life. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you do not have any life in you. And they said, this is a hard saying. Who can hear it? And from that time, many of his disciples went back and walked with him no more. If you ever get discouraged because you have a big crowd on Sunday morning and not many on Sunday night, Jesus went from 5,000 men beside women and children to 12 in 24 hours. Probably 12, 15,000 people. 5,000 men, women, children. 12,000 to 12 in 24 hours. And he looked around at them and said, y'all going to leave too? Lord, where would we go? We've come to believe that you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now, did Jesus do everything they wanted him to do? No. Lord, you're going to restore the kingdom. It's not for you to know the times or the seasons. But they said, we believe that you're who you say you are. That's reality. So, I was sitting with a family getting an operation. And they were talking about how great their new preacher was. And they were just bragging him. He hadn't been there just not much time. But then they made this profound statement. They say, we know we're going to be disappointed in him because we always are. Well, sure, that's normal. That's the way relationships go. It's kind of like asking that couple, what is it you like? What is it you don't like? You think you're going to be able to change in 6 months, but you won't. How are you going to put up with it? There is a part of the fruit of the Spirit. It's called long suffering. Anybody know the meaning of that word? It means you suffer for a long time. And so that's going to happen. That's going to happen in a relationship. So that's, just get ready. And then keep cultivating. See, it comes back, what can I do about it? If it's possible, as much as it depends on me, live peaceably with all men. So thank them for what they're doing. I told, and I don't have time to tell about that, but I was with one church, been there 5 years, and they'd never said thank you. And so I asked for it. I said, I've tried preaching with appreciation and without it, and I find it works a lot better with, and so until further notice, till I get to be a spiritual giant, I want a preacher's appreciation party the first Sunday in April of every year. Now, if I get to where I don't need that anymore, I'll let you know, but until I let you know, that's what I want. And they did. And we started having elders' appreciation parties, teachers' appreciation parties, deacon appreciation parties, and teenage appreciation parties every third weekend in February every year. So ask for what you need. Worst thing you can do is not get it. Somebody said, you mean you'd do something like that? I sure do. You know what I do about every 2 weeks? I tell Gail, it's coming on. I got to have beans and cornbread. I'm getting weak, and a little banana pudding would sure be helpful. You think I'm embarrassed doing that? Absolutely not. How's she going to know when I need beans, cornbread, and banana pudding? Now, if I can ask for that, why can't I ask for appreciation? It's just as important to me to receive that as it is something else. Any other questions?
Jerry,
yeah.
You said something about your leadership meetings, and you said that y'all spend 30 minutes in prayer, or 30 minutes in Bible study, and a few other things. How much do y'all delegate for the ins and outs that you have to take care of when you all get together and meet?
The whole thing, hour and a half, 9:30 to 11.
Okay. So how much of that, you know, if you've already done away with 30 minutes of that, how much of that 60 minutes are you talking about business?
We don't ever have any trouble. We get through. I mean, we don't. There's not a lot to coordinate. You know, we have this meeting Saturday night, and you need to do this. If you got this in, Jerry, I'll need this by Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. You know, it's usually not that complicated. But that's what we allot to it. And boy, they're thrilled. We got two janitors. I mean, they love it. Two secretaries. Youth minister. We just have a big time. We celebrate birthdays. At Bear's Chapel, we celebrated birthdays. And our rule was we'll go to the restaurant within 25 miles of Bear's Chapel that the person selects. We all buy them a card. And we try to get little cranky cards and pass it around and let everybody read it. In fact, we enjoyed that so much, we started celebrating half birthdays. So 6 months after your birthday, I'd say, my half birthday's coming up September 15th. And so the rule is we go to the restaurant within 25 miles of Bear's Chapel. Each person pays for their own meal. And the person who's being celebrated buys their own half birthday card and tells why they deserve it. And then we have funerals. And so anytime anybody's leaving, we go to a restaurant within 25 miles of Bear's Chapel. We pay for their meal. I get the flowers. We put a big pot of flowers right in the middle of the table, and everybody buys a sympathy card and writes their departing observations to that person. And so we talk about it. Are you familiar with the five acts of dying? One of the best tools I've ever seen. I don't know where I picked it up. Five acts of dying. Anytime you're leaving any relationship, forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, I love you, goodbye. Man, that's just a checklist. You'll leave in good shape. Forgive me, I forgive you, thank you, I love you, goodbye. All righty, anything else? Anything else?
This is a tangler.
Hey guys, here's what we're gonna do. we're gonna...